Welcome to Revere Assets, Your Money, with Danny Stewart.
You never know how far the stock is going to go down.
Tim Razor.
Danny knows I'm a geek for all of this stuff.
And Don Vandenborg.
Telling it like it is.
If you're seeking the best stock knowledge this side of Wall Street, you've come to the right place.
I'm sorry, did I steal your stuff?
No, you didn't steal any thunder. Who's handling this segment?
For the next hour, Danny, Tim, and Don will be talking investing.
Investing is 90% psychological, and I love that.
Trades.
The market will usually overshoot to the downside and to the upside.
And dumpster fires.
Because it doesn't matter what you think or what I think, and it matters even less what Danny thinks.
And now, here's your hosts, Danny, Tim, and Don.
So to start the show, what I was playing for our producer, Kenny, there's always a theme to the show musically. And so to start the show, it was Logical by Supertramp. And the markets are not always logical. And so, like, no kidding, right, Tim? But I don't think a lot of you quite get the ebbs and flows of what I mean by that. And so there's a lot of you that are super duper bearish. And I've been pretty neutral to defensive in this market environment, knowing what sets up, meaning you give up a whole quarter's worth of gains in 3 days at the end of September, and it kind of leads me into what potentially might be setting up here in November. It's too early to tell. I'm taping this show a little bit early on the first day of the month, but the first 3 days are the most important days of the month.
Sets a tone.
Well, it's not about tone setting. There's something a little bit more factual going on underneath the surface. But this time right now, this start of November 2019, the last two full months of trading, we'd be remiss if we didn't acknowledge that it is now officially Mariah Carey season. Oh, yeah. No. So Mariah Carey is All I Want for Christmas Is You. Mariah Carey, you know the song? Do you really know the song, Danny, or are
no,
you
I
just
do.
You're faking it? No,
I absolutely. How could I not know it with Christmas Boy sitting across?
That's exactly right. So Mariah Carey, that is got to be one of the that song has a ton of special meaning that is not for this show to me. Okay, right. And a lot of people text me across the country the first time they hear All I Want for Christmas Is You. I'll get a gazillion text or email messages that I just heard for the first time All I Want Is Christmas For You, mostly my college roommates. And so, and everyone who knows the story. And so what I woke up to on Twitter today was absolutely fantastic. So Mariah, see, you got to understand, this song has grossed since it's been out 25 years now. Mariah Carey makes her money this time of year. That song
2 months a year, she's
done. That song for streaming rights generates her about $3 million a year. That song, since it's been released 25 years ago, has generated her $60 million. One song.
That's not bad.
No, that is
a huge song, though.
That's why every one of these bands, singers, they all do Christmas albums and multiple covers of multiple songs, because you don't know which one
is going to be it.
And so that's why the proliferation of all, like, just like those the Hallmark movies that I love this time of year. Man, they're gonna churn those babies out, because it's all about just keep churning them out. People binge watch them. They understand the plot lines, the story. There's some kind of coincidental event that takes place, and then somebody's involved with somebody else, and then there's a twinge of romance, and then, oh my gosh, the person who I'm already involved with comes and surprisingly visits me, and then that person is out of my life, and then somehow there's some more drama. We don't get together, then we get together, and then it's a happy ending. Like, it's formulaic. Like, like, we as Americans love formulaic. And someone would say, who doesn't quite understand the Mariah Carey phenomena here? Like, well, why do people just keep streaming the song? It's because it's formulaic. It's upbeat. It reminds you of certain times. It's now generational, meaning, you know, 20, 25 years have elapsed since it's now spanning two generations of people. It's this generation's Nat, you know, I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas. It's Nat King Cole. That's Bing Crosby, actually. What did Nat King Cole sing? God, it literally just left my head. Don?
He had a big one.
Don, come on, Don. Come through.
No, I'm still...
Chestnuts roasting.
No, that's just...
That guy's Bing Crosby.
Oh, he may have done that, too. Well, a lot of people did that.
Nat King Cole. God, why did it just literally just left my head? It was right in the front lobe part of my brain, and now I can't think of it. It'll come to me. Don, maybe you can get on the Goog machine while I'm vamping here. anyway, so it's this time of season, and we need to celebrate it. But also, the first 3 days of the month, not just November, but every month, are what I have often referred to as the jumper trade. The jumper trade is interesting. Well, it's not a jumper. It usually markets jump. And they did it again today. And so someone would say, well, Tim, that's because of the jobs report. Okay. Or, Tim, that's because ISM wasn't as bad as we thought it was going to be. Oh, okay. It actually has to do more with portfolio rebalancing. And so a lot of folks don't take this into account. And so when I'm talking about portfolio rebalancing, what do I mean? That there's a lot of indices out there. There's a lot of managers out there or ETFs out there that have to be at certain percentages of certain stocks or certain commodities. And if they get too heavy in, say, bonds, they're going to sell bonds off, and but TLT is going to come back. Or if they're too heavy in gold, because gold made a run or gold went lower and they need to add it, they're going to add it or sell it. And they do it with stocks as well. And so a lot of folks don't realize this. Like, so when they say the market, you know, like, I used to hear this on the road a lot. So where I started really trying to find the answer to this was when I was on the road for Investors Business Daily, teaching people what I knew about the markets. And I would get, you know, this is a high quality stock because IBD features really good merchandise, you know, stock wise. And like, and it's, you know, now it's pulling back and it doesn't make any sense. The market's going higher. And okay, well, let's look at the set. Let's break it down. What sector, what subgroup is there rotation? No, it's, and then it finally just hit me about all the commonalities that weird things would happen to stocks at the beginning of the month. And it's like, okay, is it all that pension fund? Their hedge fund money gets put to work, pension money gets put to work, but it's also the rebalancing that gets put to work, so to speak. And a lot of people don't quite realize that. So the market could be just screaming gangbusters and like your little stock has not left the station that day. And it's probably because it's getting rebalanced or your commodities are getting rebalanced. And a lot of people will not take that into account, and you really should. Especially this time. And so, Danny, you're not 1,000% wrong when you say it sets the tone, because it could, you know, it could, if the selling or the buying is strong enough, it could either cast a pall to the market, or it could just, you know, say, hey, this is the environment we all want to be involved in. But there's a group of stocks that are not participating in any of this. And that would be the pot stocks or the Grubhubs of the world or some of these IPOs. And I want to talk to you about this because I was doing this. Uncle Tony came to visit Stock Nerds and Market Lovers. And Uncle Tony is, he's a really good person. So Uncle Tony, if you don't know, he is a individual investor out in San Diego. I met him when I was flying in the Marine Corps. And Uncle Tony is, his heart is extremely generous with Marines. He takes care of Marines, and his heart extends now. He takes in dogs from Mexico Way. He's a dog rescuer, and so he's just a good dude. And we joke around with Uncle Tony. Uncle Tony doesn't like ETFs. He gets ETFs cooties, and Uncle Tony likes individual stocks. And no matter, this is one of those things where I can disagree with someone and not take Like, it's like I'm still friends with Uncle Tony. Mm-hmm. Like, I can philosophically agree, you know, I can find some truth in his argument. I'm like, oh, well, that
commonality.
Is, yeah, I can find some commonality, truth in his argument. And then it's just like, okay, but I have enough, you know, on this side of the camp for me that keeps me pro ETFs. And I got to tell you what, I point that out because the world is divisive right now. And some of you don't realize how bad you are with this. Whereas if somebody were to come to you and say, I like Elizabeth Warren. Don't do it to Leo Cooperman. But I like Elizabeth Warren. A lot of you would just be up in arms. Okay. You would just start throwing hatchets at the person. And... You know that Elizabeth Warren actually, like, you know, all the fines that these companies pay, like, I'm not saying she'll be successful, but she's one of the first candidates I've heard want to take some of these companies on the market to task, in the market to task. Like, so when you commit a wrong, like, you're not getting any better protections as an individual investor when the Wells Fargos of the world screw you. Like, there's nothing, you don't wake up the next day when Wells Fargo gets fined and get anything better out of life. Just like the more you pay in taxes, when you pay more in taxes, do you get better fire protection, better police protection? Do you? No. And if you want to take our...
Or does the government pay down any of the debt?
Well, do you get better roads with the... Yeah. There's a whole litany of things I could do. And if you if you want to castigate me right now and throw stones and say, Tim, well, that's the way this society works. And yes, but it's also what leads to private protection, bodyguards. Why do you think, you know, if people felt safe in the streets, right, would there be a bodyguard industry? Would there be private security, Daniel?
No.
And if you mock me on this, and go ahead and mock me, it's fine. I've been mocked by better. Now in California, what you have is private fire protection, and you pay all those taxes, and so you don't get. Did you see the private fire with all the wildfires? $25,000 a day to hire a private crew. A professional private crew, $25,000 a day, mm-hmm. And when I was reading about it, it made sense. That I'm like, that seems steep to me, right? Yeah, but when you have a $10 million home that's uninsurable, okay,
you get over here.
You spend what you got to figure it out. And by the way, still no guarantees that it won't be destroyed, but we're gonna try. Those are fire mercenaries. Driving in there, and it's like, well, how do things get this way? Well, yeah, have a degradation of services, have a degradation of rules, and when the rules are broken, nothing happens. You know, you want rules to change, you want things to change. You're going to need some kind of radical step up. Anyway, that's a whole different discussion. But I can find some good to say about Elizabeth Warren, even though most market participants. Yeah. Look at Danny. Danny's struggling. I'm on purpose.
Well, no, I think some of the big tech companies have gotten so powerful that they need some kind of.
I'm not even talking that. I'm just talking like when you violate rules that are already in the books.
Yeah, you gotta pay for it.
No, not just you have to pay for it. Like nothing's
accountable.
Yeah. Nothing's going to change until these people go to prison. Like that. That's what I'm saying. Like I think she's the one that would actually do that. Like you want to stop. This white collar crime, don't make it so cozy for them. If you put John Stump.
Well, yeah, but I think the politicians are involved too. I think some politicians need to go to prison too.
Without a doubt.
But
cite fact and verse where they've done wrong and been convicted of it, not just hearsay and your political leaning. That's what I'm saying.
And that's
a whole nother show, Daniel. But a lot of people they go into whimsy about, well, this person should be convicted because Wells Fargo did wrong. They've been fined, like they've been quote unquote convicted. But you don't hold the individuals who are at the helm accountable. Boeing,
I would agree with that.
Boeing is probably going to be the same fate here. The fact that Boeing hasn't been fined. The fact that Boeing hasn't been, they just sent their CEO up to Capitol Hill. Dude, dude. Like, you've had so long to get all the things out, all the announcements out. Like, the reason why I don't think Boeing will be held accountable, or even Boeing will be fined, or even the people that allowed the system to, you know, where they say that the FAA allowed Boeing to kind of dictate the certification.
And they were co-opted by their industry, yeah.
Well, it's because they're such a part of the GDP. And think about this. The Boeing
a huge part of lobbyists. They lobby hard
right.
with the
contractors. It's like 800 contractors,
yeah.
like companies, not yeah. 800 people, like 800 companies are contracted out to build these.
Feed off of Boeing, yes.
Do you realize that those people are starting to slow down because they're not, they say they haven't slowed down the 737 MAX. But if that pipeline slows down and they're not able to get this plane back up in the air, the ancillary businesses that feed off of the Boeing trough, they're the ones that feel it first. And it starts at the lowest rungs of society. Mm-hmm. It starts at the diner, the local gift shop, the local whatever it is. And the
small suppliers.
Yeah, but I've drifted off my point here. So I can disagree with Tony about some things, but I was covering with Uncle Tony. See, I'm a professional broadcaster. I'm going to bring it back. When Tony was out here visiting, we were going over some trading strategies, which, by the way, stock nerds, if you're a client of the firm or you happen to want to visit the offices, we love to have you. Just come on out and we'll sit down with you and show you what we're doing. Like, there's very few things in life that are proprietary. That can't be shown, and most there's very few things that are new in trading. What's the difference is psychology and just using fact-based data, not gut feel leanings. And I know that works sometimes, but to be successful over a very long period of time, you need a fact-based system. Anyway, so Tony and I are talking, and I said, Tony, you know, a lot of folks don't realize. The real issue with the market, like kind of right here, and what my issue with the market is, and it's a supply issue, meaning there's a ton of stock available in the market. And I said, we have an IPO issue in this country right now. I said, the only IPOs that are making it, that are investable, like we've got the same recycled merchandise to invest in here, right? And what I want you to think about, stock nerds, is to get something that, like, everyone raves about Apple going up 50-55% for the year, or 57% for the year. You had to knock Apple down, though, substantially to get that gain. You had to knock Apple down in 2018, right, mm-hmm. to get that kind of gain. And I'm not coming out against Apple, not being disingenuous and talking down, or it's not really a gain. I'm just stating that. Because there's old and recycled, you don't know where I'm going with any of this, do you? I can see
I'm following.
No. I mean, but you're like, where's he taking this train? And so
that would make two of us, Danny.
Oh, good. Good.
That would make, what'd he say?
That'd make two of us. So what I'm getting there. So there's an endless amount right now of bad supply to the market. Apple's not bad supply. But you got to realize there's billions of shares. Like, there's 4,519,000 shares of Apple outstanding, okay? To get Apple to move, it takes a tremendous amount of hands being raised at the auction, which the market is. We cover this often. I'm doing this for a reason. To get price to go up when the bidder says whatever the price of Apple is it 257, 257, 255? Hands have to go up to get the price to go higher.
Lots of hands.
To get Apple to just drift lower, my friends, it doesn't have to be streaming TV is bad. It doesn't have to be Tim Cook is bad. It doesn't have to be anything bad or nefarious. It's just that when the auctioneer says, do I hear 255 for Apple? There's no hands. And then he says, do I hear 254.90 and no hands. And then it just keeps going until someone feels that that's the, whatever the price the auctioneer mentions is a fair price for the shares that they want to buy. That's how price discovery works. And a lot of you are missing the basics of this right now. And so the whole price discovery thing I could talk days about because it sounds so simple when I describe it, but when people start rationalizing their decisions in the market or their thoughts about the market, they leave out this important discussion of the auction. Like, well, what drives the, like, how much more inertia does it take for Apple to want to potentially move higher? Like, I think we're going to revert back to the mean in the markets, okay? I think that doesn't mean it's going to happen. But if you want to kind of put why some of these stocks that people thought are game changers, and you heard people with the professional reputations in media and Twitter and Facebook and wherever you get your news from talking about stocks, you got to go back and look at the supply. So Apple has 4 billion shares outstanding, okay? Mm-hmm. But think about the garbage that's Uber, okay? Okay. Uber came public with over 1,700,000,000 shares. Apple, an established company, which is split umpteen times, comes, you know, right now currently has 4,519,000,000 shares. And the audacity of Uber, this garbage company that wants to, well, that, boy, that's conjecture, isn't it? That wants to eliminate their workforce through autonomy, right? Like, they're actually they're trying to tell the drivers, we care about you, but oh, by the way, every day we're working to eliminate you.
Self-driving cars.
Yeah, that's exactly it, right? It's an amazing thing. Like, oh, we love you. Like, without the drivers, there's no Uber, right?
Well, for now,
they're
just trying to keep placating till.
Oh, it's a game of chicken, right? Between autonomy, like, can we get autonomous cars here before we really piss off the drivers and they just walk? It's a game, right? But Uber would be substantially a better IPO if they didn't come public with 1,700,000,000 shares. It would be a better company. Beyond Meat, everyone likes to whip Beyond Meat, right? Mm-hmm. Beyond Meat, right now, Beyond Meat has 60,565,000 shares, substantially less than Uber, right? Mm-hmm. But Beyond Meat also went up considerably from its IPO. Why? It was a smaller raise. There was scarcity. Mm-hmm. If you gave the market scarcity, not supply, it would be a different market. I'd feel a little bit better about the market. I would still tell you that it wants to revert back to the mean. But when you're looking at stocks, stock nerds and market lovers, and you're trying to latch on to the next story stock, which I know in your heart, my heart, a number of you do, like you got sucked into the pot stocks. And it's real easy to just start taking shots at them. But I want to uncover this and then give you something I think that's really going to help you. And that's where I'm going to bring Don into this in a second to talk about Robo 25. So if you understand the supply issue of the stocks that you're trying to invest in, and you actually look at the share counts, you can say to yourself, okay, what's it going to take for this thing to actually get inertia and move higher? Apple's run in 2019, after, especially in January, when it came out and told you how bad China was going to be, well, they downgraded their own stock. You know, they didn't need a firm to do it. They did it themselves.
They just want to beat the analysts to it.
Yeah. Like, it's an amazing journey. Like, you should take nothing away from it. Don't talk it down. Just accept it for what it is. It's been an amazing price run. And, well, those people are stupid to keep it on. Doesn't matter what you think. If price is truth, which a lot of people like to say, then the truth is Apple has had a tremendous 2019. And so, well, Tim, there's a tremendous amount of supply out there, right? But it's got inertia. Take Lyft.
But it's getting sopped up.
It's getting sopped up. Yeah. Take Lyft, which just reported a half-decent quarter. Lyft has a substantial, so in the same quote-unquote industry, if we say rideshare, I get it. Uber does food delivery, and Uber does a whole bunch of other stuff. But you realize that Grubhub's a piece of junk, right? Like, Grubhub is about to become irrelevant. And it's in Uber's food delivery service as well. If you're a public company and you've got to compete, and you've got to compete against private equity companies where there's no public accountability, it's just accountability. The company can burn through as much cash as they want. DoorDash, and a bunch of others that are in the delivery space. There's a bunch of other smaller startups that have private equity money. They're not accountable to shareholders except the people that invested in them, which is a really small pool of people. And that group of people could be irrational before they realize that this is a sum-zero game, and meaning it's going to go to the race to zero, Daniel. Yeah.
Well, it's a commodity. You can get a bunch of cheap drivers to just go take, you know.
Well, can we agree that the job of you picking up someone's McDonald's
is not
the most is like you taking a Big Mac to somebody who's
doesn't require I'm not putting anybody down. I've said the barriers to entry are
no, it's stupid. It's not a career.
Yeah, exactly.
No matter what you say, that's not a career. Taking somebody fast food that gets cold by the time you deliver it is a job. It's probably not a career. It's a job. And that's a huge difference. But anyway, but Lyft has a substantially better chance of beating Uber. And some of you probably fall in lines of, I only take Uber. I only take Lyft. Like it's like Coke or Pepsi. And I'm telling you, it comes down to the market cap size. Lyft has 292,821,000 shares outstanding. They already have a competitive advantage because if this sector subgroup, if the space heats up, the scarcity of Lyft, if it can just match Uber
meaning
on the front
number of shares, yeah.
Exactly. It gives them a tremendous advantage. Let's talk pot stocks. The pot stock, like if you believe in the story and if the pot stocks were to heat up again, I don't know. There's probably a lot of pot jokes I could be making. I don't know what would cause that. But if it were to happen, okay, because you were sold a bill of goods about all these reasons why pot's going to ignite. And then
pot's going to ignite.
And then, it did for a little bit, and before it didn't. But the reason why it didn't is because it has to do with supply. They've issued supply in this space because as the stock started going up, what did they do? They issued a tremendous amount of supply. And so if you're the person who fancies yourself as a long-term investor and you've been averaging down in the Ubers, in the Lyfts, in the new economy, Daniel, in the pot, in the CGCs, the canopy growth, in the Tilrays, you're just hosed, right? Like you're a long-term investor, not because you want to be, but because you probably feel like you have to be. But if you look at supply beforehand and very few times do you get a blow off top like Tilray had and have it be sustained. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Tilray has 97,644,963 shares and they've done secondaries. Canopy Growth. By comparison, Canopy Growth's outstanding shares. Like, so for those of you that were lulled by somebody telling you that Canopy Growth is the high quality name and that's the one you should be buying, which a lot of people were saying mm-hmm. in 2018, mm-hmm. Canopy Growth has 347,865,670 shares outstanding. Do you know what kind of inertia, what kind of momentum, what kind of smoking they need to be doing at the price auction house for Canopy Growth to actually go back to where you probably bought it from? So I'm bringing this up for a number of reasons. One, a lot of you don't look at market cap size before you buy stocks. I would like you to start just doing that as a cursory and ask yourself, what kind of inertia, what kind of market does it take to get this stock going in the direction I want it to? Because if you did that, you wouldn't chase. Like if you did that, I think it might stop you a little bit from catching the proverbial falling knife, right? Just let me give you some numbers here of some high quality stocks and their market cap. AutoZone is a phenomenal stock story. That's something you could buy, right? Mm-hmm. And so AutoZone has this tremendous buyback program, whether you're for buybacks or against buybacks. I just bring it up for a reason. They are retiring stock, which is really, in my opinion, I've come out against buybacks in certain instances, but it's investing in yourself. AutoZone.
Or the management, but go ahead.
They got some long-term management there.
No, I know. I'm just saying buybacks. It's tough. Right. Tough call.
Well, let's talk.
Depends on the real motives.
We'll talk about this in a second.
Okay.
AutoZone has 23,827,496 shares outstanding. That's it. And that matters because if you have a high quality stock as defined by how we define fundamental quality, top 10%, fundamentally and technically, that's how we actually put criteria behind that stock. There's market lovers. We just don't go around. I can't stand the gallivanting around by investors. I only buy quality stocks. What do you have? Canopy and Tilray. Okay. Good to go. You need, there's criterium for the fundamentals. And so we do that.
Criterium.
Yeah, criterium. Absolutely. And so AutoZone, if you have a high quality stock and a small amount of supply, you can do a lot of things. BIIB, Biogen. No, we own Biogen. $180,441,000. Not too big of a supply. And so a lot of folks who are doing this on their own and frustrated by the markets, I don't think are looking at this. And I think if you just are, if you're investing on your own, if you took an opportunity to say, how can I reduce the volatility in my portfolio? Like, you know, like I'm buying these stocks, I'm buying these stories. Like, how do you buy story stocks and they don't work out? I think this is one way that stops you from saying, you know, Beyond Meat's on a mission and they're going to change the way. It's not about veganism or vegetarianism. It's about a better way to eat, quote unquote, meat without having to kill animals. It's a better way to get protein. So, okay, great. That's fine. I'm not, there's no judgment in my voice about that.
No, I wasn't judging. Yeah. Just the way you said it, the way to eat meat without killing animals. Animals are meat.
Well,
I got it.
Right. And so if you believe that story, that's great. But Beyond Meat, before it retraced almost half of its gains, had a much smaller market cap. And if you just considered that, you'll reduce the volatility, I think, in your own investing life and increase your odds of a little bit more success. But there's a better way, I think, to increase your odds of success. And that's something that we don't have on our website. We don't have this on our website, do we? We don't have Robo25 on our website.
No, we don't.
Put it on
there, no.
Robo25 is
it was actually a hybrid portfolio.
Right.
That came up
Don Vandenborre, the portfolio extraordinaire from St. Augustine, Florida, that is about to speak here and tell you about it, is it takes the best of the best growth stocks, which go into Growtection, the top 5, top 10%, fundamentally, technically. We show you what we're doing there in the videos every night. And if you want the video, the weekend video that's associated with this podcast is done by Don Vandenborre. Don's going to go over what the differences between Growtection and Robo25 are. But the Robo part of the portfolio is the stability part. It doesn't rotate that much. It rotates when needed. And it gives you the best of both worlds. It gives you growth and this stable platform to build upon. Did I do a good job of describing that, Don?
You did.
Oh.
You absolutely did. But stepping back a second.
Go ahead.
Are you talking about the chestnuts roasting on an open fire?
That's what I am. Yes, the Christmas song by
there
Nat.
There you go.
The Christmas song by Nat King Cole. Thank you.
Chestnuts.
That's it.
Very cleverly named, the Christmas song.
Yes, I like it. Too simple. Way too simple.
I used to have a friend named Chestnuts Roasting. There were some jokes made about that song to Chet, but since this is a family show, we're not going to talk about that. But back to Robotection 25.
Yes.
So the traditional Robotection portfolio consists of 8 asset classes, provided they're in an uptrend. Those asset classes being domestic stocks, foreign stocks, domestic bonds, foreign bonds, real estate, energy, emerging markets, and gold. And Robo 25 is just taking a 25% slice of that and allocating it to approximately 5 growth stocks that would also be held in our growth portfolio, in the Growtection portfolio. So important to remember, the big gains that you see from the market, most of those come from less than 1% of the equities that are out there. And that's what we're on the quest for, is to identify that 1% that makes up for the lion's share of the gains in a year or in a decade or in multiple decades. And that's what we're trying to accomplish with the Robo 25, is keeping that balance with the indexes, staying in sync with the market, and spicing it up a bit by adding some of the best growth stocks. And you might say, well, why don't you just stick with the growth stocks all the time? And, you know, a day like today where you're looking and you think the market's up nicely, but if you dive a little bit deeper, you'll see that staples, real estate, and utilities are down. And you think, oh, so it must just be all growth stocks today. No, because the momentum ETF is only up 0.2%, while the value ETF is up 1.2%. So, yeah, strange market. You never really can tell what's going to dominate from one day to another, let alone 1 week or 1 month to the other. But this is a good way to sort of cover all the bases with the ballast and the spice, so to speak.
I want to jump in a little bit there. So one other thing, when you were talking about you can't ever tell from one day to the next or, you know, 1 week, but also each market uptrend, each market, you know, primary uptrend, it may be one group or a couple leading stocks. And the next cycle, after you have a big pullback or even a bear market or sell-off, the next time around, it could be a completely different group or a completely different couple set of stocks. But I also want to kind of simplify a little bit of what you said about the Robo 25. So it's actually a combination of passive sector, you know, the main sectors of the asset classes that is indexing with low-cost ETFs. And then you've got the active portion, the growtection portion for active. So it really is a combination of active and passive portfolios. And they work very well in tandem because one kind of smooths out the other. So,
well, it's the only.
But it's not just passive. It's passive as long as it's in an uptrend.
Yes, with a sell.
Because energy's been in a downtrend. There was a long time when we weren't in gold because gold was in a downtrend.
And
so,
bonds for a little while.
That portion normally goes to the equivalent of cash, which is a very short-term bond portfolio that we've been making a lot of use of in-house lately, which has a very steady NAV and at the same time about between a 2.5% and 3% yield.
Right. So that's actually a very, very good point. So it's somewhat passive, but with a sell discipline. So it's in the particular sector, whether it's stocks or bonds or gold, when it's okay, but when it gets really weak, it gets sold out. So last year you went into gold, you got out actually of gold, and then you got back in when the uptrend resumed again, and then you're out of bonds for a little while.
Did we lose?
Correct.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so what's interesting is it's the only robo though with a sell discipline.
Right.
And so what's going to happen when, you know, by the way, going back to Elizabeth Warren here for a second, the people that are complaining that the market's going to pull back 25, I think it was Paul Tudor Jones, the market's going to pull back 25% when the moment she gets elected. That was last fourth quarter. People seem to still be breathing and walking around.
Well, you were talking about price discovery a while ago.
Yeah.
I wish Congress had a grasp of price discovery, not just market participants.
Why do you say that?
Well, because I think their plans. Warren, for instance, plans. I think a lot of her plans are not doable on the way that she plans to implement them.
Okay. Well,
the monetary. And by the way, it's not just her.
Right.
There's lots of plans out there that are.
But the point being, you've got a 25% pullback in 2018.
Yes.
Like that, you just had, or 20% pullback, whatever the fourth quarter was, 20 or 20, between 20 and 25%.
It is a little over 20 on the S&P and 22 and a half on the NASDAQ.
Yeah. Russell was
27.
Right. I mean,
that wasn't insignificant.
That's normal.
That's what insignificant.
It wasn't insignificant, but that's not out of the norm. You got to start exceeding, you got to stay down there, not recover from it. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean,
well, you had a couple good years after the Great Recession, as they called it, when they started the QE. You had a couple years where you had pretty outsized returns and without major, and people don't realize most years, about one out of every three or one, two out of about one and a half, two every 3 years has a double digit correction in that year, and many years have two. So you've got to get, you know, that you're right. That's part of it.
It's just part of the game. But with Don's Robotection, the people that are going to get hurt the most are not in Don's Robotection. They're going to be the ones that are just passively investing with Schwab or TD or Robinhood because there's no sell discipline.
Right.
It's all your gains. All hear me on the, if you when we're getting into holiday season when people get together, okay. If you're listening to this podcast, there's a great chance that you would like markets and stocks and or you're an active investor. But that doesn't mean day trading.
Right.
Boy, active defined by the brokers is like a couple trades a month. Okay? It's not day trading.
Right.
So with that in line, this is why I don't talk stocks and markets at any function. I refuse to. I tell people I don't do this. I do something else because I don't want them to hit me up or tell me their philosophies of the market. I don't need to hear it. I've got a very new, if anyone who knows me and been listening to this show for a while, you understand that to market, anything can happen. That mindset is so, it's such a minority mindset in this, in anyone who talks about investing. But if you find yourself at the dinner table just possessed for some reason, like you feel compulsion to talk about stocks and markets with people because you're sitting across from a know-it-all, the way to shut the conversation down is to say the following. So this actually should be like a community service alert. We need some, tell Kenny, please. Kenny, we need some community service alert music, like an alert chime, a one to grow on from NBC at this point in the show. The way to get people to understand your point of view without being rude, without being not nice, without being snarky, is to say the following. Your gains, listen to me here. Your gains in the market are irrelevant unless you have a sell strategy. Let's break that thought down. Somebody can brag to you, since 2009, I'm up 1,000,000%. Great. That's irrelevant unless you have a plan to protect it. At what point do you take your 1,000,000% gains and say, I'm shutting it down, this market's not good?
Or what would make me shut it down? Exactly.
Your gains are irrelevant unless you have a sell discipline. Now, let's take it a step further. Most people don't have this mindset because if their house were to lose value, like in the last recession, you couldn't have a, if you had a sell discipline beforehand, you probably just got lucky. But if you got out at the top or got out as it was starting to pull back and you sold it to somebody else. But if once it's known that the economy's weak, you don't apply a sell discipline to your home. You don't apply a sell. If your car every day is a depreciating asset, you don't, unless it's a collectible.
It still has utility.
Your car has utility.
If your stock portfolio goes down, it loses utility.
It has no utility. Your stocks have no utility unless they're going up in price or maintaining price. And
well, Tim, you sell them and spend them.
Hold on. Let's caveat it. Well, Tim, I'm getting a fat dividend. It's not offsetting the depreciation in price.
Depreciation.
Like you need to understand that the market is different than most every other facet in your life. And your gains and your words and your snark and sitting across from the person who's just follically challenged and mad at life, but the only thing they've got clinging to is their portfolio because it's in a 401k that their employer provided, and it's really not their acumen that's driven it. It's been the employer's contributions. And so to shut it all down to shut it all down, stock nerds, because I love you. I'm going to give you my tip of the holiday season. You just say your gains are irrelevant unless you have a sell discipline. And that sell discipline, by the way, could be simply taking profits. Or it could be if I lose 5% of my overall portfolio, you know, 10% or 20%, whatever.
Take some portion off the table.
Yes, because the thought that it can always come back, you know, we do it almost every show where we just run through, we randomly mention a stock that never came back. Fitbit's one of them. Fitbit's in the news. Fitbit got bought by Google at a 60%. You know, Google, they're smart people. You know what they did? They let the thing die. Like when people say Twitter, like, you know, Google should buy Twitter or Apple should buy Twitter. You know what they're going to do? They're going to wait till Twitter's a $7 stock and then they're going to soak it up. They're not going to be like you who out there who bought Twitter at 40, was it whatever Twitter's trading at right now is not 40. They're not like you who bought Twitter at 35. Twitter's not trading 35. They're smart money. You know, if they were smart, they would buy Twitter. You know what they're going to do? They're going to wait till that is worth nothing.
They're
going to wait till it's worth nothing. If you're, think about it. Wouldn't you, if you're on the other side, the companies that you buy because you think they're going to be acquired, it's an absolute ridiculous thing. Unless you just stepped into Fitbit because you had an inkling or you saw the news alert and I'm going to get in, great. But if you were the person that bought the IPO or the teens of Fitbit where it IPO'd and then subsequently started drifting down from, you know what you have? You have a big L. And you got your acquisition that you've always been wanting. And you know what it comes in the form of? Google. And oh, by the way, Google, can we just talk about you buying Fitbit? I just said they were smart. Let me contradict myself. Great. You bought the second-rate company that can't really compete with the Apple Watch.
Fantastic. Well, they bought it so they can try to compete with the Apple Watch. That was the that's their goal. But, you know, and who knows? Fitbit, I don't know enough about it.
They have sales. They, I know.
Well, but they may have a few patents in there.
It's better as a private. I'll tell you what, man. You know, you got to be really – you have to be a masochist, I think, to want to come public in this environment. Not just this environment, but into the market the way it is right now. And most companies, I'm telling you, I believe it in my heart, are only coming public, not because they want to take your funds and grow the company and they have got great management. They need a liquidity event to pay off
the cash amount.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the problem. And that's why I really wanted to talk about supply from a different angle today.
Yeah, no, I got it. Now with Google, you know, they've already here, they got billions of dollars to invest. So if they could be they could possibly turn Fitbit around, but it's not there yet.
No, I mean, not even close.
It may not help their bottom line. It won't for a while.
Don, real quick, as we get ready to wrap up the show here, What are you thinking for next week as we head into the markets and any last vestiges of knowledge about Robo 25?
As far as the market goes, keep an eye on this week's lows that will keep the uptrend firmly intact. And then below that, the 21-day exponential moving average, we haven't tested that in a couple of weeks. Those are the two key levels on the major indexes that I'm keeping an eye on, and we're finally getting some participation with small caps and mid cap stocks, and that has the potential to certainly carry the market higher.
I'll tell you what, Danny, I've got some thoughts. Any Robo 25 things you want to share, quick, Don?
No, I think we covered it pretty well, and I think we have given everybody a pretty good idea of what it is.
It's the
key is focusing in on what stocks have those characteristics to becoming big leaders. And something that isn't talked about an awful lot is you mentioned a liquidity event. You got to make sure these stocks that you're looking for are liquid, because you do not want to be in something that's thinly traded. And when everybody's heading for the exits, nobody can get out the door.
Or one or two big investors get out. Don, on the next Lunch and Learn, is that this Wednesday or the following Wednesday?
Yes, this Wednesday.
Okay. Do me a favor. Why don't you also kind of touch on the Robo 25 for this Wednesday? Folks, if you don't know about that, Don does a Lunch and Learn live market webinar every other Wednesday at noon Eastern time, 11 o'clock Central. And if you want to check that out and sign up for it, just go to Don at revereasset.com. Just email him and he'll send you the link and the details. He'll get you signed up and with no pressure. It's just, it's for learning. All right. Well, folks, if you liked what you learned, tell a friend, tell a neighbor. You can email any one of us, tim@revereasset.com, dan@revereasset, or don@revereasset. You can always call us old school at 855-REAL-WEALTH.
Yeah, I like what Don said about the 21. And my entry for this market, if I wanted to get long this market, the first pullback, more long than what I am right now, it's being patient.
Right.
And waiting for everything always reverts back to the mean. It's just being patient to wait for that opportunity. And so, I think that's where if you're an investor that wants to get more long, or if you're not long right now and you're like, well, how do I get into it? Wait to the 21 daily exponential moving average. And if it starts closing below that, you can make a decision. Because if it starts closing below that, it's probably going to the 50. So, okay, that's my stop out point. Or you get two closes below the 21, you're done with that trade, whatever it is, and then you proceed on. But listen, stock nerds, email don@revereasset.com. If you want something private, like a private lesson on Robo 25, Don does that. It's free. We don't spam you. We don't do any of that nonsense. Attend Don's webinar on Wednesday. I'm telling you, these things are picking up in popularity because he actually answers your questions personally. So you can email Don this weekend, don@revereasset.com, and say, hey, Don, what do you think about this stock? Does it fit the Robo 25 portfolio? What is the rotation in the Robo 25? All those types of questions. What are the tax consequences? All those types of questions Don will answer personally for you anytime you ask them, but there's a great forum this coming Wednesday to do that.
We'll talk to you next week on Your Money.